On now, Jocelyn, said Luke. I know it might seem half impossible. Valentine was always such a huge presence, even when he was in hiding. But he really is dead. My son isn't, though, said Jocelyn. You know, I used to take this box out and cry over it every year on his birthday. I dream sometimes of a boy with big green eyes, a boy who was never poisoned with demon blood, a boy who could laugh and love and be human, and that is the boy I wept over, but that boy never existed. Take it out and cry over it, Clary thought. She knew what box her mother meant. A box that was a memorial to a child that had died, though he still lived. The box had contained locks of his baby hair, photographs, and a tiny shoe. The last time Clary had seen it, it had been in her brother's possession. Valentine must have given it to him, though she could never understand why Sebastian had kept it. He was hardly the sentimental sort. "You're going to have to tell the Clave," Luke said. "If it's something that has to do with Sebastian, they'll want to know." Clary felt her stomach go cold. "I wish I didn't have to," Jocelyn said. "I wish I could throw the whole thing in the fire. I hate that this is my fault," she burst out. "And all I've ever wanted was to protect Clary, but the thing that frightens me most for her, for all of us, is someone who wouldn't even be alive if it weren't for me." Jocelyn's voice had gone flat and bitter. "I should have killed him when he was a baby," she said, and leaned back, away from Luke, so that Clary saw what was on the surface of the kitchen table. It was the silver box, just as she remembered it. Heavy, with a simple lid, and the initials J.C. carved into the side. The morning sun sparkled off the new gates in front of the guard. The old ones, Clary guessed, had been destroyed in the battle that had wrecked much of the guard and scorched the trees along the hillside. Past the gate she could see Alicante below. Shimmering water in the canals, the demon towers reaching up to where sunlight made them glitter like mica sparkling in stone. The guard itself had been restored. Fire had not destroyed the stone walls or towers. A wall still ran around it, and the new gates were made of the hard, clear adamas that formed the demon towers. They seemed to have been hand-wrought, their lines curving in to circle around the symbol of the council. Four C's in a square, standing for Council, Covenant, Clave, and Consul. The curvature of each C held a symbol of one of the branches of Downworlders. A crescent moon for the wolves, a spellbook for the warlocks, an elf arrow for the fair folk, and for the vampires, a star. A star. She hadn't been able to think of anything that symbolized vampires herself. Blood? Fangs? But there was something simple and elegant about the star. It was bright in the darkness, a darkness that would never be illuminated. And it was lonely, the way only things that could never die were lonely. Clary missed Simon with a sharp pain. She was exhausted after a night of little sleep, and her emotional resources were low. It didn't help that she felt as if she were the center of 100 hostile stares. There were dozens of shadow hunters milling around the gates, most of them unfamiliar to her. Many were shooting Jocelyn and Luke covert glances. A few were coming up to greet them, while others stood back looking curious. Jocelyn seemed to be keeping her calm with a certain amount of effort. More shadow hunters were coming up the path along the guard hill. With relief, Clary recognized the Lightwoods, Maris in front with Robert beside her, Isabel, Alec, and Jace following. They were wearing white mourning clothes. Maris looked especially somber. Clary couldn't help but notice that she and Robert were walking side by side but apart, not even their hands touching. Jace broke away from the group and moved over toward her. Gazes followed him as he went, though he seemed not to notice. He was famous in a strange sort of way among the Nephilim, Valentine's son, who had not really been his son. Kidnapped by Sebastian, rescued by the Blade of Heaven. Clary knew the story well, as did everyone else close to Jace. But the rumors had grown like coral, adding layers and colors of story. Angel blood. Special powers. Heard that Valentine taught him tricks. Fire in his blood. Not right for Nephilim. She could hear the whispers, even as Jace moved among them. It was a bright winter day, cold but sunny, and the light picked the gold and silver threads out of his hair and made her squint as he came up to her at the gate. "Morning clothes," he said, touching the sleeve of her jacket. "You're wearing them," she pointed out. "I didn't think you had any."
"Armatices," she said.
"Listen, I have to tell you something." He let her draw him aside. Clary described the conversation she had overheard between her mother and Luke about the box. "It's definitely the box I remember. It's the one my mother had when I was growing up, and the one that was in Sebastian's apartment when I was there." Jace raked a hand through the light strands of his hair. "I thought there was something," he said. "Maris got a message from your mother this morning." His gaze was inward. "Sebastian turned Luke's sister," he added. "He did it on purpose to hurt Luke and hurt your mother through Luke. He hates her. He must have come to Alicante to get Armatus that night we fought at the Burren. He as much as told me he was going to do it, back when we were bound. He said he was going to kidnap a shadow hunter from Alicante, just not which one." Clary nodded. It was always strange to hear Jace talk about the self he had been, the Jace who had been Sebastian's friend, more than his friend, his ally. The Jace who had worn her Jace's skin and face, but had been someone else entirely. "He must have brought the box with him then, left it in her house," Jace added. "He would have known that your family would find it one day. He would have thought of it as a message or a signature."
"Is that what the Clave thinks?" Clary asked.
"It's what I think," Jace said, focusing on her. "And you know we both can read Sebastian better than they can, or ever will. They don't understand him at all."
"Aren't they lucky?"
The sound of a bell echoed through the air, and the gates slid open. Clary and Jace joined the Lightwoods, Luke, and Jocelyn in the tide of shadow hunters pouring through. They passed through the gardens outside the fortress, up a set of stairs, then through another set of doors into a long corridor that ended at the council chamber. Gia Penhallow, in consul robe, stood at the entrance to the chamber as shadow hunter after shadow hunter came through. It was built like an amphitheater, a half circle of tiered benches facing a rectangular raised dais in the front of the room. There were two lecterns on the dais, one for the consul and one for the inquisitor, and behind the lecterns, two windows, massive rectangles, looked out over Alicante. Clary moved to sit with the Lightwoods and her mother, while Robert Lightwood broke away from them and headed down the center aisle to take up the place of the inquisitor. On the dais, behind the lecterns, were four tall chairs, the back of each inscribed with a symbol: spellbook, moon, arrow, star. The seats for the downworlders of the council. Luke eyed his but seated himself next to Jocelyn. This was not a full council meeting with downworlder attendance. Luke wasn't here in an official capacity. In front of the seats a table had been erected, draped with blue velvet. Atop the velvet lay something long and sharp, something that glimmered in the light from the windows. The mortal sword. Clary glanced around. The flood of shadow hunters had slowed to a trickle. The room was nearly filled to its echoing roof. There had once been more entrances through the guard. Westminster Abbey had had one, she knew, as had the Sagrada Familia and St. Basil the Blessed, but they had been sealed when portals were invented. She couldn't help but wonder if some kind of magic kept the council room from overflowing. It was as full as she'd ever seen it, but there were still empty seats when Gia Penhallow stepped up onto the stage and clapped her hands sharply. "Will the council please come to attention?" she said. Silence fell quickly. Many of the shadow hunters were straining forward. Rumors had been flying around like panicked birds, and there was an electricity in the room, the crackling current of people desperate for information. "Bangkok, Buenos Aires, Oslo, Berlin, Moscow, Los Angeles," said Gia. Attacked in quick succession before the attacks could be reported. Before warnings could be given, every conclave in these cities has had its shadow hunters captured and turned. A few, pitifully few, the very old or very young, were simply killed, their bodies left for us to burn to add to the voices of lost shadow hunters in the silent city. A voice spoke from one of the front rows, a woman with black hair, the tattooed silver design of a koi fish standing out on the dark skin of her cheek. Clary rarely saw shadow hunters with tattoos that weren't marks, but it wasn't unheard of.
You say turned, she said. But do you not mean slain?
Gia's mouth tightened.
I do not mean slain, she said. I mean turned. We speak of the Andarkan, the ones Jonathan Morgenstern, or as he prefers to be known, Sebastian, turn from their purpose as Nephilim using the Infernal Cup. Every institute was issued reports of what happened at the Baron. The existence of the Andarkan is something we have known of now for some time, even if there were perhaps those who did not want to believe it. A murmur went around the room. Clary barely heard it. She was aware that Jace's hand was around hers, but she was hearing the wind on the Burren and seeing shadow hunters rising from the Infernal Cup to face Sebastian, the marks of the Grey Book already fading from their skin.
Shadow hunters don't fight shadow hunters, said an older man in one of the front rows. Jace murmured into his ear that he was the head of the Reykjavik Institute. It is blasphemy.
It is blasphemy, Gia agreed. Blasphemy is Sebastian Morgenstern's creed. His father wanted to cleanse the world of downworlders. Sebastian wants something very different. He wants Nephilim reduced to ashes, and he wants to use Nephilim to do it.
Surely if he was able to turn Nephilim into monsters, we ought to be able to find a way to turn them back, said Nazreen Chowdhury, the head of the Mumbai Institute, regal in her rune-decorated white sari. Surely we should not give up so easily on our own.
The body of one of the Andarkan was found at the Berlin site, said Robert. He was injured, probably left for dead. The Silent Brothers are examining him right now to see if they can glean any information that might lead to a cure.
Which Andarkand? Demanded the woman with the koi tattoo.
He had a name before he was turned, a shadow hunter name.
Amalric Kriegsmesser, said Robert after a moment's hesitation. His family has already been told.
The warlocks of the Spiral Labyrinth are also working on a cure.
The whispered, omnidirectional voice of a Silent Brother echoed in the room. Clary recognized Brother Zachariah standing with his hands folded near the dais. Beside him was Helen Blackthorne, dressed in white mourning clothes, looking anxious.
They're warlocks, said someone else in a dismissive tone. Surely they won't do any better than our own Silent Brothers.
Can't Kriegsmesser be interrogated? Interrupted a tall woman with white hair.
Perhaps you know Sebastian's next move, or even a manner of curing his condition.
Amalric Kriegsmesser is barely conscious, and besides, he is a servant of the Infernal Cup, said Brother Zachariah.
The Infernal Cup controls him completely. He has no will of his own, and therefore no will to break.
The woman with the koi tattoo spoke out again. Is it true that Sebastian Morgenstern is invulnerable now, that he can't be killed?
There was a murmur in the room.
Gia spoke, raising her voice.
As I said, there were no Nephilim survivors from the first of the attacks, but the last attack was on the Institute in Los Angeles, and six survived, six children.
She turned.
Helen Blackthorne, if you please, bring the witnesses out.
Clary saw Helen nod and disappear through a side door. A moment later she returned. She was walking slowly now and carefully, a hand on the back of a thin boy with a mop of wavy brown hair. He couldn't have been older than 12.
Clary recognized him immediately. She had seen him in the nave of the Institute the first time she had met Helen, his wrists clamped in his older sister's grip, his hands covered in wax where he had been playing with the tapers that decorated the interior of the cathedral. He had had an impish grin and the same blue-green eyes as his sister.
Julian, Helen had called him, her little brother.
The impish grin was gone now. He looked tired and dirty and frightened. Skinny wrists stuck out of the cuffs of a white morning jacket, the sleeves of which were too short for him. In his arms he was carrying a little boy, probably not more than 3 years old, with tangled brown curls. It seemed to be a family trait. The rest of the children wore similar borrowed morning clothes. Following Julian was a girl of about 10, her hand firmly clasped in the hold of a boy the same age. The girl's hair was dark brown, but the boy had tangled black curls that nearly obscured his face. Fraternal twins, Clary guessed. After them came a girl who might have been 8 or 9, her her face round and very pale between brown braids. All of the Blackthorns, for the family resemblance was striking, looked bewildered and terrified, except perhaps Helen, whose expression was a mixture of fury and grief. The misery on their faces cut at Clary's heart. She thought of her pal with runes, wishing that she could create one that would soften the blow of loss. Mourning runes existed, but only to honor the dead, in the same way that love runes existed, like wedding rings, to symbolize the bond of love. You couldn't make someone love you with a rune, and you couldn't assuage grief with it either. So much magic, Clary thought, and nothing to mend a broken heart.
Julian Blackthorne, said Gia Penhallow, and her voice was gentle. Step forward, please.
Julian swallowed and nodded, handing the little boy he was holding to his older sister. He stepped forward, his eyes darting around the dais. He was clearly scouring the space for someone. His shoulders had just begun to slump when another figure darted out onto the stage, a girl, also about 12, with a tangle of dark blonde hair that hung down around her shoulders. She wore jeans and a t-shirt that didn't quite fit, and her head was down, as if she couldn't bear so many people looking at her. It was clear that she didn't want to be there, on the stage or perhaps even in Idris, but the moment he saw her, Julian seemed to relax. The terrified look vanished from his expression as she moved to stand beside Helen, her face tucked down and away from the crowd.
Julian, said Gia in the same gentle voice, would you do something for us? Would you take up the mortal sword?
Clary sat up straight. She had held the mortal sword, she had felt the weight of it. The cold, like hooks in your skin, dragged the truth out of you. You couldn't lie holding the mortal sword, but the truth, even a truth you wanted to tell, was agony.
They can't, she whispered. He's just a kid.
He's the oldest of the children who escaped the Los Angeles Institute, Jay said under his breath. They don't have a choice.
Julian nodded, his thin shoulders straight. I'll take it.
Robert Lightwood passed behind the lectern then and went to the table. He took up the sword and returned to stand in front of Julian. The contrast between them was almost funny. The big, barrel-chested man and the lanky, wild-haired boy. Julian reached a hand up and took the sword. As his fingers closed around the hilt, he shuddered, a ripple of pain that was quickly forced down. The blonde girl behind him started forward, and Clary caught a glimpse of the look on her face, pure fury, before Helen caught at her and pulled her back. Gia knelt down. It was a strange sight, the boy with the sword bracketed on one side by the consul, her robe spreading out about her, and on the other by the Inquisitor. Julian, Gia said, and though her voice was low, it carried throughout the council room. Can you tell us who is on the stage here with you today? In his clear boy's voice, Julian said, You, the Inquisitor, my family, my sister Helen, and Tiberius, and Livia, and Drusilla, and Tavi, Octavian, and my best friend, Emma Carstairs.
And they were all with you when the Institute was attacked?
Julian shook his head.
Not Helen, he said. She was here.
Can you tell us what you saw, Julian, without leaving anything out?
Julian swallowed. He was pale. Clary could imagine the pain he was feeling, the weight of the sword.
It was in the afternoon, he said. We were practicing in the training room. Katerina was teaching us, Mark was watching. Emma's parents were on a routine patrol at the beach. We saw a flash of light. I thought it was lightning or fireworks, but it wasn't.
Katerina and Mark left us and went downstairs. They told us to stay in the training room.
But you didn't, Gia said.
We could hear the sounds of fighting. We split up. Emma went to get Drusilla and Octavian, and I went to the office with Livia and Tiberius to call the Clave. We had to sneak by the main entrance to get there. When we did, I saw him.
Him?
I knew he was a shadow hunter, but not. He was wearing a red cloak covered in runes.
What runes?
I didn't know them, but there was something wrong with them. Not like the gray book runes. They gave me a sort of sick feeling to look at. And he pushed his hood back. He had white hair, so I thought he was old at first. Then I realized it was Sebastian Morgenstern. He was holding a sword.
Can you describe the sword?
silver with a pattern of black stars on the blade and the handle. He took it out and he... Julian's breath skittered and Clary could almost feel it. Feel his horror at the recollection, warring with the compulsion to tell it, to relive it. She was leaning forward, her hands in fists, hardly aware that her nails were digging into her palms. "He held it to my father's throat," Julian went on. "There were others with Sebastian. They were wearing red, too."
"Shadow hunters?" Gia said.
"I don't know." Julian's breath was coming short. "Some wore black cloaks, others wore gear, but their gear was red. I've never seen red gear. There was a woman with brown hair, and she was holding a cup that looked like the mortal cup. She made my father drink out of it. He fell down and screamed. I could hear my brother screaming, too."
"Which brother?" asked Robert Lightwood.
"Mark," said Julian. "I saw them start to move into the entryway, and Mark turned around and shouted for us to run upstairs and get out. I fell on the top step, and when I looked down, they were swarming all over him." Julian made a gagging sound. "My father, he was standing up, and his eyes were black, too, and he started moving toward Mark like the rest of them, like he didn't even know him." Julian's voice cracked, just as the blonde girl wrenched herself free of Helen's grasp and hurtled forward, throwing herself between Julian and the consul.
"Emma!"
Helen said, stepping forward, but Gia held out a hand to keep her back. Emma was white-faced and gasping. Clary thought that she had never seen so much anger contained in such a small form.
"Leave him alone!"
Emma shouted, throwing her arms out wide as if she could shield Julian behind her, though she was a head shorter.
"You're torturing him! Leave him alone!"
"It's okay, Emma," Julian said, though the color was starting to come back into his face now that they were no longer questioning him. "They have to do it." She turned on him.
"No, they don't. I was there too. I saw what happened. Do it to me."
She held out her hands, as if begging for the sword to be put into them.
"I'm the one who stabbed Sebastian in the heart. I'm the one who saw him not die. You should be asking me."
"No," Julian began, and then Gia said, still gently, "Emma, we will question you next. The sword is painful, but not harmful."
"Stop it," Emma said. "Just stop it."
And she walked over to Julian, who was holding the sword tightly. It was clear he had no intention of trying to hand it over. He was shaking his head at Emma, even as she laid her hands over his so that both of them were holding the sword together.
"I stabbed Sebastian," Emma said in a voice that rang out through the room. "And he pulled the dagger out and laughed. He said, 'It's a shame you won't live. Live to tell the Clave that Lilith has strengthened me beyond all measure. Perhaps glorious could end my life. A pity for the Nephilim that they have no more favors they can ask of heaven, and none of the puny instruments of war they forge in their adamant citadel can harm me now.'"
Clary shuddered. She heard Sebastian through Emma's words and could almost see him standing in front of her. Chatter had burst out among the Clave, drowning what Jace said to her next.
"Are you sure you didn't miss the heart?" Robert demanded, his dark eyebrows drawn together.
It was Julian who answered.
"Emma doesn't miss," he said, sounding as offended as if they had just insulted him. "I know where the heart is," Emma said, stepping back from Julian and casting a look of anger, more than anger, hurt, at the consul and the Inquisitor. "But I don't think you do."
Her voice rose and she spun and ran off the dais, practically elbowing her way past Robert. She disappeared through the door from which she had come, and Clary heard her own breath rush out through her teeth. Wasn't anyone going to go after her? Julian clearly wanted to, but, trapped between the consul and the Inquisitor, carrying the weight of the mortal sword, he couldn't move. Helen was looking after her with an expression of raw pain, her arms cradling the youngest boy, Tavi. And then Clary was on her feet. Her mother reached for her, but she was already running down the sloping aisle between the rows of seats. The aisle turned into wooden steps. Clary clattered up them, past the consul and Inquisitor, past Helen and through the side door after Emma. She nearly knocked over Aline, who was hovering near the open door, watching what was going on in the council room and scowling. The scowl disappeared when she saw Clary and was replaced by a look of surprise.
"What are you doing?"
"The little girl," Clary said breathlessly. "Emma, she ran back here."
"I know. I tried to stop her, but she pulled away from me. She's just
Aline sighed and glanced at the council room where Gia had begun to question Julian again. It's been so hard on them, Helen and the others. You know their mother died only a few years ago. All they've got now is an uncle in London. Does that mean they're going to move the kids to London? You know when this is all over? Clary said. Aline shook her head. Their uncle's been offered the leadership of the Los Angeles Institute. I think the hope is that he'll take over the job and raise the kids. I don't think he's agreed yet, though. He's probably in shock. I mean, he lost his nephew, his brother. Andrew Blackthorne isn't dead, but he might as well be. In a way, it's worse. Her voice was bitter. I know, Clary said. I know exactly what that's like. Aline looked at her more closely. I suppose you do, she said. It's just, Helen, I wish I could do more for her. She's eating herself up with guilt because she was here with me and not in Los Angeles when the Institute was attacked. And she's trying so hard, but she can't be a mom to all those kids, and their uncle hasn't gotten here yet, and there's Emma, Angel, help her. She doesn't even have a scrap of family left. I'd like to talk to her, to Emma. Aline tucked a lock of hair behind her ear, the Blackthorn ring shimmering on her right hand. She won't talk to anyone but Julian. Let me try, Clary urged. Please. Aline looked at the determined expression on Clary's face and sighed. Down the hall, the first room on the left. The hall curved away from the council room. Clary could hear the voices of the shadow hunters fading as she walked. The walls were smooth stone, lined with tapestries that depicted various glorious scenes from Shadowhunter history. The first door that appeared on her left was wooden, very plain. It was partly ajar, but she rapped quickly before opening it, so as not to surprise whoever was inside. It was a simple room, with wooden wainscoting and a jumble of chairs hastily assembled. It felt to Clary like a hospital waiting room. It had that heavy sense in the air, of an impermanent place where people spent their anxiety and grief in unfamiliar surroundings. In the corner of the room was a chair propped against a wall, and in the chair was Emma. She looked smaller than she had from a distance. She was only wearing a short-sleeved t-shirt, and on her bare arms were marks, the voyant's rune on her left hand, so she was left-handed like Jace, which lay on the hilt of an unsheathed short sword lying across her lap. Up close, Clary could see that her hair was a pale blonde, but tangled and dirty enough that it had looked darker. From between the tangles, the girl glared up at Clary defiantly. "What?" she said. "What do you want?" "Nothing," Clary said, pushing the door shut behind her. "Just to talk to you." Emma's eyes narrowed in suspicion. "You want to use the mortal sword on me? Interrogate me?" "No, I've had it used on me and it's awful. I'm sorry they're using it on your friend. I think they should find another way." "I think they should trust him," said Emma. "Julian doesn't lie." She looked at Clary challengingly, as if daring her to disagree. "Of course he doesn't," Clary said and took a step into the room. She felt as if she were trying not to frighten off some kind of wild creature in the forest. "Julian's your best friend, isn't he?" Emma nodded. "My best friend is a boy, too. His name is Simon." "So where is he?" Emma's eyes flicked behind Clary as if she expected Simon to materialize suddenly. "He's in New York," said Clary. "I miss him a lot." Emma looked as if this made enormous sense. "Julian went to New York once," she said. "I missed him, so when he got back, I made him promise he wouldn't go anywhere without me again." Clary smiled and moved closer to Emma. "Your sword is beautiful," she said, pointing at the blade across the girl's lap. Emma's expression softened fractionally. She touched the blade, which was etched with a delicate pattern of leaves and runes. The crossbar was gold, and across the blade were carved words. "I am Cortana, of the same steel and temper as Joyeuse and Durandal." "It was my father's. It's been passed down through the Carstairs family. It's a famous sword," she added proudly. "It was made a long time ago." "Of the same steel and temper as Joyeuse and Durandal," said Clary. "Those are both famous swords. You know who owns famous swords?"
"Who?"
"Heroes," Clary said, kneeling down on the ground so she could look up into the girl's face. Emma scowled. "I'm not a hero," she said.
I didn't do anything to save Julian's father or Mark.
I'm so sorry, said Clary.